It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. Now, what I'm talking about, our fucking game. I want him talking about us. Well, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's been watching so much tape of defenders, he's forgotten what the art of defending actually is. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Man, my brain is leaking out my ear, man.
Well, you've got so many variables to look at, haven't you? It's like, will they fit Ange ball? Can they dribble the ball into midfield? Can they play progressive passes? Can they run back from the halfway line?
Yeah.
They have to have a lot of different attributes.
Yeah.
Are they better than Ben Davies?
Yeah, honestly, that is, like, there is genuinely a, like, you do have to make sure you're clearing that bar. Because otherwise,
they need to meet the Ben Davies threshold.
Yeah. And like, there's a couple of younger players who are like, oh, you know, this kid is 19, 20 years old, and he's projecting to be like a potentially high level centre back. But right now, is he going to be an improvement on Ben Davies? You know, and that's worth considering. But doesn't change. Ooh. And there's also the player that I really do like for covering left back and left centre back.
Spoiler alert.
Hiroki Ito, who I've tweeted about before. My description of him is, imagine if Ben Davies was a very athletic player. that would right. And right now, the stock is rising on what that player is. But I'm trying to populate my list of Romero backups, and I'm finding it very, very hard because I'm looking for someone who's a defensively aggressive. And when you highlight those players and you go watch them, a lot of them are like really good in their 1v1 duels, and they're good in the ball and the technical, and they're interesting to watch. And then like you go and ask around about them, it's like, oh yeah, this guy makes like 12 positional mistakes a game. He's been dropped, you know, all these kinds of things because these players are tough. I always find centre backs difficult. My takes on centre backs that we signed have not been of the consistency, I would say, of my other roles, and I don't feel too bad about that. And I'm finding it tough.
The point being, though, that this is all research for your next video for the X-Subs, I assume?
Yeah. The idea is that I'll populate my list of these are the profiles, and then I'll talk through them a bit and show through them a bit and do a short form video and maybe do a longer form video on a couple of the more interesting ones. The good news is that my overall number one pick for this guy can come in instantly, be at the same level as Romero and Van de Ven, and potentially cover both roles, is Jean-Claire Todibo, who we've been linked to quite strongly in the last few days, as well as prior to that. And the bad news is that there's no way that we should be able to land him when he could be first choice at several other similarly well-paying clubs, right?
Well, this is the other thing, is he plays for Nice, who are currently second in the league.
Yep.
So I guess there's partly an argument of like, why would he leave right now? Because his side are challenging for the title, but also he has a contract until 2027. They're second in the league. They don't need to sell low. He's going to cost a lot of money, right?
Yeah. And, for me, the owner of Nice is also the owner of Man United, and Man United desperately needs good centre-backs. So, like, you know, it, in a just world, that shouldn't be a factor, but, you know, that ain't the situation.
Who would go to United right now? They are an absolute shit show. Little greenwashing update. because I'm still getting lots of emails from kind listeners to let us know when they spy oil company adverts on the podcast. I think we've now closed the loop. The problem was that our good friend at Acast hadn't updated our blocked list. So basically, I submitted a new blocked list because some other stuff was coming up. And in submitting the new block list, it wiped out everything. So stuff that was on the pre-existing block list was then getting through. So you shouldn't have ever had adverts for oil companies because it was already on the block list. But in resubmitting it, it set us back to nothing. So there was a brief period there where people were hearing stuff they would not normally hear on the Extra Inch podcast adverts. If you ever feel like you've heard something that doesn't seem to fit the ethos of the pod, please do let us know, podcast@theextrainge.co.uk, and we'll try and figure that out. But yeah, appreciate your support with this. I think we've done all we can in terms of, you know, pointing out in quite a lot of detail why these are bad adverts and why we don't want them on the pod. So, you know, we've been paid a little bit of money by BP for essentially saying that they're shit and horrible. So that makes me feel a bit better about it. But yeah, it's not ideal that they made it through the block list, but these things happen. Well, you can tell we're putting off talking about Nottingham Forest because
keep going. Let's talk more about greenwashing. Oh my goodness! God.
But it wasn't the best game, was it?
No, it wasn't. I missed the game live because I had a Christmas do. But I do find it funny we're talking about chopping down forests after all the greenwashing stuff. So it's quite
after Forest chopped us down all game.
That's true, but it's nice to keep this kind of destroying the planet theme going. I've caught up on it on the highlights, the YouTube match of the day, all the rest of it. And as someone who didn't watch the game, 2-0, what are you worried about? It was pretty straightforward, no?
You'd think so. And it started off well, Nathan. I thought, you know, we initially looked okay, and then very quickly, it all fell apart when Brennan Johnson got a head injury, really. And Skip came on, Kulusevski moved out wide, Skip played the Madison role. Can you believe that? Oliver Skip played the Madison role. And we just had nothing in midfield. It was really, we were struggling to progress the ball and we looked a bit of a mess.
No, I feel worse than that. I wasn't too happy with our opening 30 minutes. I didn't think that was great. So Forest played a 5-3-2 defensive shape in a sort of a medium low block, and they were super super aggressive on the wingers. The wingers were Sun and Johnson, so they didn't let them turn. I forgot I was going to tweet. Sun went 2-for-6 on dribbles
against Nico Williams against Nico as well. Williams. You know, he's not a good defender, in my opinion.
Neko Williams for the differentiation. So, we're really struggling to get the ball down the wide areas. And then occasionally we would go from one wing, start working it towards the other. And then there would be a moment where there was space open in the middle and Kulusevski would pull off a magic trick. And that wasn't counting for a lot. Obviously, you take a 30-minute sample and you say, okay, what are the shots? That can be a little tough, but we weren't doing great. Probably we're going to grind out a win as long as we score before 60 minutes kind of thing. But
it
wasn't the case that, you know, if you go back to the Chelsea game, it's like, oh yeah, we're absolutely flying for 30 minutes and then a terrible thing happened. This was off to a bad start, and then it got worse, and then it got worse again. And also we won 2-0.
In a weekend where teams have played pretty bad, and the sort of Man United Liverpool game was absolute trash. Man City drew. Is this a case of Spurs grinding out a result and showing some character, or is this warning signs?
I think you could look at it either way, to be honest. I think that Steve Cooper is a good manager, first and foremost.
Sure.
Tactically, he's sharp, he's smart. I did find it a bit weird watching this Forest team because hyper-aggressive, hyper-physical, very tall Forest team who played lots of balls into the channels. That didn't tally with what I've seen of Steve Cooper's sides in the past, where they normally play through the midfield a bit more. And so I did find that interesting. You know, perhaps he's just adaptable and he's adapting to the circumstances he finds himself in. But he is a good manager, I believe. And I do think he kind of got the better of Ange, certainly defensively, and the system worked well. They kind of, they played with two forwards, but those two forwards were Alanga and Gibbs-White, and they both played quite wide as forwards. They weren't too connected, I don't think. Nathan, would you agree with
that? Yeah, I mean, that's how Brennan Johnson used to play as a forward for Forest. He would play as a very much a wide forward, with obviously Owoniyi playing a little more central when he was the strike partner. But definitely splitting wide in possession, but also both tracking into pretty deep defensive positions and not pressuring the centre backs much at all defensively. So yeah.
There's some good stuff to say about this game as well, in that Kulusevski was once again really, really impressive. He is in incredible form. I think he's been, for me, Kulusevski, Porro, Son, Vicario, I would say have been our best players this season. I think all of them would be in a shout for player of the season if they carried on this level of form. But Kulusevski in the last few has really stepped up and taken on a lot of extra responsibility, and that seems to suit him, I think.
I think so. He's been brilliant. I think we've become the Kulusevski team, and it's sometimes it's just his physicality and just willingness to do stuff that gets us through games. I thought he was, you know, he was really good against Newcastle without getting the kind of plaudits or the goals or assists that kind of us in this kind of fantasy football world we live in. I thought he deserved more from that performance. But it's great to see him making a difference and scoring goals. He's been really impressive.
Mm. Equally, I thought Richarlison put in another really good shift. Excellent header, general good scrapping, some decent centre-forward hold-up play, which was pleasing to see. And Ben Davis was really, really solid. And we'll definitely talk about him a bit more. But there were lots of issues to discuss. Let's start with Skip. So Ben W says, with a busy Christmas period incoming, is now the time to try Skip at the six? It feels clear that he's not where he is an eight, and I think he may benefit from starting games, similarly to Lo Celso struggling to get into games from the bench. Plus, we've seen that Højbjerg, who is already not everyone's cup of tea, definitely struggles when he's overplayed. Similarly, Adamalist says, please, can we be patient with Skip? He's a young player who's shown promise. He's averaged 17 minutes per game under Ange. He's played further forward than he's used to. How much better can we reasonably expect a third or lower choice, 6/8, to be? So my view on Skip right now is I really like Skip as a player. I think he's got a lot of good attributes. I think we have been quite patient with Skip over a long period of time, and I think it's now time to cut him loose because I don't see a fit for him in Ange ball. I think he's not press resistant enough to play the six, he's not agile enough to play the eight, and he's not creative enough to play the 10. So I'm left wondering, okay, where does Skip play? Like, maybe he could play as backup right back, maybe. But other than that, I just do not see a place for him in this team. I think six is the best fit for him, but none of them are great. And I'm kind of a bit worried that we are going to see more of him over the coming games because with Bazuma out injured, we're going to need him. And that doesn't fill me with joy. How about you guys?
Yeah, in this game particularly, we were struggling creatively, as I said, before the 30th minute, and then Skip came on, and obviously, of course, we were playing with 11 men for the next 39 minutes. Is that right? Yes, that's right. And we just really, really suffered for that decision, which sounds like I'm hugely criticizing Skip. I'm not, because I'm saying you're putting Postecoglou put a pretty defensive player who might be keen to arrive in the box, but isn't a creative player, isn't a progressive player, really, into that sort of number 10 role. So. We lost basically all creativity except for Kulusevski then dug out a fantastic cross out of very little. Actually, nice waiting on the pass from, was it Saar? Because Saar's pass played it slightly ahead into Kulusevski's path, which means he can fake that he's going to try to run on and then create the space for the cutback, where so many times we see that our wingers receive the ball and they have to turn back facing their own goal to receive it. So some credit to Saar there, who otherwise had a difficult game. We should talk about that in a minute. Yeah, Kulusevski sort of basically summoned two goals out of nothing, and we did very little creatively outside of that. And yeah, certainly Skip coming into that role is difficult. I think on the bench we would have had Valise, Donnelly and Hill. So I think that it made sense in isolation to move Kulusevski into a wide area because Son and Johnson were just getting completely shut down and we had no wide progression at all, right? So in isolation, getting Kulusevski, someone who's going to find a way to make something happen when they're being closed down, makes some sense. But then you need to try to recreate some creativity in the middle as well. So if, for example, you'd brought like Valise on and then moved Richarlison over to the right or something, that would have been pretty difficult too. So Hill struggled when he's played. And then obviously Donnelly's the only factor. So I'm not saying that there's an easy answer there, but I guess tactically Donnelly would have made the most sense. Again, I understand why that's unlikely, but that's still my position. So a difficult pick for Postecoglou, but I'm still frustrated at him, even though we won, right? We won the game. His decision led to a win. And we were obviously better able to see out the later situation where we had 10 men. Because, you know, if Donnelly was asked to play, you know, in a midfield two, that's a difficult situation or whatever. But now talking about Skip as a whole, he's 23, which in the context of how great a squad is actually not that young. He has about 8,000 career minutes, nearly 4,000 of which came for Norwich, but 1,500 in the league last season and nearly the same again the season before. So he's not an unknown quantity. He's not lacking a run of games. He's had a run of games in two different seasons and he's been okay. And that is okay. It's okay to be okay in the context of the best league in the world. He can go on and have a very good career as a professional footballer. And I understand the benefits of him being homegrown and someone who can play a couple of roles in the squads. So he's not the first player out the door. But I am finding his frequent appearances for us at the moment a little frustrating.
Anything you'd like to add, Bardi?
I think it's really difficult for Skip to try and fit into this team. He's just not well suited. He's not the player that ideally we want. And I, like you, Wendy, I'm concerned. I don't want to, in your kind of post-match podcast, you didn't want to start Skip bashing. And I don't really want to do that either because he's young and he's English and that's my kind of Spurs player. So I just feel a bit sad that it's not going to work for him. I don't see him working as a six and I don't see him working as a box-to-box. I think Ange has spoken about doing stuff early in January and I think a midfielder would be pretty useful because I just don't see anyone else in the club able to step in and help. I don't even think giving him more minutes like what happened to Lo Celso is going to be able to change it. I don't think this is a form issue. I think it's a stylistic problem.
Yeah, I tend to agree. On the subject of the midfield, Mitch Burden says, I've been thinking ahead to the midfield conundrum we've got coming in January with Bissouma, Saar, Maddison and Bentancur out, plus rumours Lo Celso could be sold too. Kulusevski looks a revelation in midfield, but Son missing also leaves us short along the front line. Is there any possibility Pedro Porro could be deployed as a conventional right winger with Royale sitting behind him? And in our pre-pod chat, I was saying to Nathan, the only other option, if Postecoglou didn't want to play Donnelly or Hill or Valise or whoever, was Emerson Royale coming on for Brennan Johnson and Pedro Porro either moving into midfield with Kulusevski moving wide or Pedro Porro playing as an out-and-out right winger. The problem with that, of course, is Pedro Porro is crucial to our ball progression and he's doing extremely well as a inverted fullback, so you'd lose that with Emerson Royale coming in. So, you know, the difficult decisions for Postecoglou and things to weigh up and trying to work out like what's best at different times of different matches. But how do you guys feel about Porro changing position temporarily in January?
I think in this game, I would have preferred it to Skip coming on. I'll say that much. in terms of January ahead, that doesn't feel good enough for a run of games. I'd have to really think through the rest of the squad and other options and when the games are and when the window opens and who's potentially back from injury, when to be certain about how much sense that makes for January, but it's not hugely appealing.
There's this film called Nowhere. It's on Netflix. It's a Spanish movie. I don't know if you've seen it, where this lady gets stuck in a shipping container out at sea, and it's so stupid. But the shipping container's sinking. So let's think of Tottenham as the shipping container. And I think by moving Porro out of the position he's in now, all you're doing is just sticking your finger in one hole and then the water's coming out somewhere else. That's not a solution. Mm. Yeah, I agree for maybe 30 minutes here and there, but I think if your plan to get through January is to move Porro, who's one of our best players this season, out of where he's really being effective somewhere else, you're not gonna stay afloat. Eventually it's gonna sink, it's gonna be worse. So yeah, I think we need to buy someone or loan someone.
Yeah, I think in this game where Forest weren't really pressing us and we were able to get the ball forward, however, for the first couple of lines, having Emerson Royale in that position and Porro further forward would have been fine. But throughout a run of games of January, that can seriously harm the way we play at the back. So probably not.
I do think we're going to see some experimentation over the coming weeks because of all the injuries and now suspensions as well. Sam Ray actually makes an interesting point. He says, after watching the Newcastle match, he had a bit of a hot take. Would it be so bad to sell Lo Celso in late January for a good fee? Convinced he is that Kulusevski can play that midfield role. And I'm kind of on board with that concept. Like, I really like Lo Celso. I'm not against him staying generally, but he's injured again. He is so unreliable in terms of being available for matches. And if we can get a good fee for him from a Spanish team, I kind of like the idea of keeping him around for January and then selling him right at the end of the window.
It's just pointless at the moment because it doesn't matter how good he is. If he can't stay fit and put a run of games together, he doesn't serve any use to us. Mm. And he's just taking a squad space, and that's money. I said that he's had a good run of form. Sell him now while his stock is high, because we can't continue like this. He can't put a run of five or six games together to even help us out of this situation.
Mm. And of course, one of the best attributes of your favourite Højbjerg is that he is always available. I think it has been a very important quality of his. We're going to need him now because Bissouma got himself sent off. So Joel Hooton says, I'm such a fan of Bissouma, like all of us at the start of the year. Now I'd be happy to sell him for another player. Wow. How much of our ups and downs and rashness is chalked up to youth? All of these players are quite young. Is this a stupidity issue or a maturity one? I think Basuma's 26, I want to say. He might even be fraction older.
He's not a kid.
Yeah, he should know better. I mean, that was a really... He basically miscontrolled the ball, and in trying to then go and recover, he made a lunge, and I'm sure he instantly regretted it, and he looked absolutely devastated coming off the pitch. But it's four games he's going to miss. He's out a long time. It's so disappointing, and of course that does comes in and plays six for the next however many games. How did you feel about that Bissouma decision?
Could you read Harry Sherlock's question for us?
So Harry Sherlock says, is Ange's high-octane style of football ultimately to blame for the repeated yellow and red cards? I wonder if our fouls are noticed more regularly because we're so front footed when we don't have the ball.
So I think the reason I wanted you to ask this question is because I think it's probably relevant to the Bissouma incident, and probably relevant to somewhat to our general high number of red cards this season, although obviously you have to consider the Romero factor. I mean, obviously, like, that Bissouma's red card in this game comes off the back of, like, our possession. It's not that we were defending a transition. Bissouma has a loose touch because he tries to turn with a difficult ball, right? So it's that sort of, you know, all those things that we loved about this season, being brave, we never stop, taking it to the opposition, never clearing, always wanting to have the ball, also leads to a situation where you get a loose ball in a large amount of space and a difficult situation after a one mistouch, miscontrol from a player who's good at controlling the ball, right? So I think that with that context, but otherwise looking at this situation in isolation, I might just say that about the incident. But I think when you also remember what happened against Luton, you might say, does Bissouma have this tendency for just sort of I don't know, losing concentration, maybe? What's another term for what I'm looking for here?
Tactical.
Yeah, what's the Conteism? Lacking in the tactical element.
There is a point to this, though. So Spurs have made the most tackles this year out of all Premier League teams. We've made like 100 more tackles than Man City.
Wow.
That's about 70 or about 70. My maths is rubbish, but it's about 50 to 70 tackles more than Arsenal. So there's no team in the top four who are currently in the top four in the league anywhere near us in terms of tackles. We're right at the top with Crystal Palace, Everton, and some proper cloggers like Sheffield United and Forest and that kind of stuff. We're also the joint third most booked team. Alongside Sheffield United, Chelsea, those lot. And Basuma's the guy that's committed the most fouls. So I do think there is something in this about Spurs' their aggression. And Ben Davies was praised for being really aggressive. Be aggressive. I got that stupid cheerleader chant in my head every time I watch Spurs. And we are really aggressive and we do go for the ball. And these things will happen, but they can't keep happening. You know, they can't. I understand getting booked, but that was reckless. That was like the Romero tackle. There's a fine line, man. We don't want to lose aggressiveness, but we want to lose the recklessness. That's what I would like to see us.
Buddy, good tactical observation back with statistics, man.
Yeah, you know what I mean? This is new me. No more wild takes and just building a hill for the sake of it. I don't want to keep losing money.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is something broader in it, and it feels really frustrating because Forrest kicked us off the park.
Yeah,
you know, so Ryan Yates made foul after foul after foul on our players. He also waved the imaginary yellow card twice, which is meant to be a bookable offence. And I don't think he. Did he get booked? I don't think he even got booked. Maybe late in the game he got booked. But it felt like quite cruel almost that he went unpunished.
Didn't get booked.
Whereas Udogi got a booking for a decision which wasn't even a foul, probably, and now misses the next game. And Basuma made a genuine attempt to play the ball, albeit reckless, and gets a red. So it does feel quite cruel as a Spurs fan at the moment. I think we're so fouled and feeling so sort of got at because we have a lot of the ball and we play quick football and it tempts players into tackles and tempts them to play, to make sort of cynical fouls to break the game up. So we can expect to be fouled a lot. But you make a good point, Bardi. We're also fouling a lot because we want to win the ball back. We press high. We want to stamp our authority in the game and ruffle the feathers of the opposition team. So there's a lot of fouls in Spurs games at the moment. Nathan, you wanted to talk about Sarr as well.
Yeah. Just sorry, probably not worth the whole section. Just like this game made for another example, especially on the back of... especially on the back of the Newcastle game where he really starred, that he would then follow that up with a game against a low block, and his tendency to really telegraph his passes would cost us possession a handful of times and him otherwise not really shine. That he's a great player for back and forth open games where there's lots of space and struggled here. He does this thing where, and I have done this in video form before, he will like, he's got the ball. He turns his entire body to the play he's going to pass to. He begins dribbling towards the play he's going to pass to. He does a huge backlift with his passing foot and then he plays the pass. And it's like, that got red like three times against Forest because they have the play ahead, all of the players ahead of them, and they're ready there to pounce the whole time. You've got to have a bit more guy than what you do. So don't want to have a big, huge go. Don't want to try to reconsider Sarr as a player. Just a continuing of the previous observation. Great in the big games, less good in the low block games.
Yeah, no, I've noticed this. He did the same thing twice in the first half against Newcastle, where he kind of telegraphed the pass he was about to make and it got intercepted. And one of the times, Gordon had a real good chance to set a teammate free and blew it. So when I used to play football as a very young child, I remember one of the things my coach used to say to me was, let the ball do the work. So, you know, you don't need to run towards your teammate and pass the ball, because the ball will get there quicker if you just play the pass. But So I come at it from a point of view of, you know, I naturally would rather him just play the pass early rather than run towards his teammate with the ball and then play a pass. However, Ange likes us to play over short distances. He likes our players to be close to one another and to play quick, short, sharp passes in triangles. So I guess Sarr's intention is to reduce the distance between him and his teammate and therefore make the pass less risky. The unfortunate thing is he then telegraphs the pass as well. So he's closer, good, but telegraphs it bad. Does that make sense?
I don't think it's that. I don't think that does make sense, because I would just say that, like, the start of the action is the beginning of the carry towards the pass. So he's not making a short, he's not making a quick pass, because you've got to include the prior action in the overall action.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's just a technical issue. I think that he's not comfortable. He's not sufficiently comfortable passing the ball across his body.
Yeah.
He wants to get his hips aligned in a certain way. I still think you can make up for that with more guile, that there's a way of him getting better with that. And I think, to be honest, I think he already has gotten better with that. Just not to a level where the issues disappeared completely.
Mm.
But I think we've already spoken too long about this. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not a huge deal.
I think also, you know, the way we play and the way we train will naturally see the technical level of our players improve, because the training that they're doing will be so high octane and they'll have to move the ball so quickly. You know, it's been a criticism of me with Skip. I think he lingers on the ball a little bit too long for Ange, but we can't quite keep up with the pace of the rest of the team, and when he comes on he looks really slow and stodgy. And I do think the same is the case for Sarr. The technical passing level is not quite there, but it will improve. And the thing with Sarr is he has a lot of the other attributes. He's got the game intelligence, he's got the body shape, he covers so much ground. So there's a lot of benefits to Sarr, whereas I don't think Skip has those same benefits.
Agree.
Matt Healing says, is Gentle Ben quietly becoming a very, very solid centre-back? He reminds me of Jan's left-back centre-back hybrid. Not rapid, but not slow at all, and very comfortable in most offensive and defensive situations, which makes him a really decent option in the setup. Would you take a punt on Lloyd Kelly and Jan, or put it into the pot for a tap sober in the summer in the hope that we can rely on Ben stepping up when we face absences through injuries, or just pure reckless stupidity?
I'm not getting sucked into this this Gentle Ben redemption arc like I did last time, where I said he was the new Paolo Maldini who moved from left back to centre back, which is also a very familiar tale for Vertonghen. I think Ben is doing a good job, which is great. I think, like we said maybe last week or the week before, he's kind of the emergency of getting a left sided centre back has been, that fire has been put out.
Yeah.
And instead we just need to focus on the right hand side. I don't think he's a very, very solid centre back. I just think he's doing a decent job.
The fire's out, but there are still some embers and some smoke, in my opinion. I think sooner or later teams are going to start punting the ball into our left channel and realise that he's not as fast on the turn as Van de Ven, and I'm a little scared for that. He's done well. I'm really glad that he's in the squad. I'm really glad that he's getting, you know, been getting minutes ahead of, you know, Emerson Royale or even Eric Dyer. But he's definitely not a sustainable long-term centre-back future. So we do need to address backup left centre-back at some stage, just slightly less urgently than before. Played well against Forest, but had a lot of time on the ball. Really loved his goal-saving touch versus Newcastle. Been solid but gentle. So praise for what he's done, but let's not get carried away. We still need to improve our centre-back situation quite desperately.
Yeah, I would agree. I think been really pleasantly surprised by how well he's fit in. I think even his distribution has been at a higher level than I expected. I think his defending has been not gentle, actually. I think he's been very kind of brave and aggressive.
Sure, okay.
But he's slow. He's quite old. He turns slowly. We can 100% do better than Ben Davis over a period of time. For now, though, you know, he's been a brilliant, brilliant stand-in, and I'm really pleased for him and for us that we've had him.
Here's a question for you and the listeners to ponder. Can you guess who I am? Not me, but this person. I won a European trophy for an Italian team and an international trophy in Italy, but I'm not Italian. I joined Tottenham from France, but I'm not French. I left Spurs to go back to my country of birth, but still managed to win a trophy in England. Who am I?
God.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
If you and the listeners are stuck, here's a little clue. I rejoined Tottenham from Italy. Who am I? I'm Jurgen Klinsmann.
Oh, God's sake.
Jesus.
God, that's... God. So, God, talk us through the moves he made.
So, Jurgen Klinsmann, he won a UEFA Cup in Italy for Inter Milan, and then also won a World Cup at Italia 90 in Italy. He then joined Monaco after Inter had a disaster of a season, and he was at Monaco for a little bit before then he fell out with the coach, and he joined us from Monaco. So he came back to Spurs, but then famously he left when Alan Sugar said he wouldn't wash his car with his shirt, and he went back to Germany. But he came back to England in 96 to win Euro 96 in England. He then, after leaving Bayern, he went back to Italy, to Sampdoria, and then joined us under Christian Gross, I imagine. On loan from Samp and helped us survive relegation. And Jurgen Klinsmann was one of the players to feature in the TEI Bardi's Top Players for Spurs advent calendar, which is approaching its climax.
And then he went to Orange County Blue Star.
And now he's going to ruin our season by calling up Heung-min Son to the Asian Cup.
Man, estate agent's dream, Jurgen Klinsmann. He has been about the place, eh?
If you're a long-time listener, you might know I've been drinking AG1 for quite a while. I absolutely love it. It's part of my routine. It's part of what I get up to every morning. Right now, it's the season of goodwill and cheer. And if, like Basuma, you find yourself with very little to do over the festive period, but drink and indulge, it's good to know that at least you're starting every morning with the right decisions and the right base in place. AG1 gives me that sweet, sweet Kulusevski delivery of goodness. It makes sure I'm tip-top all the time, not just in December. Richarlison has showed us all, when you feel good, you perform good. So when you're making your New Year's resolutions, make better decisions. Be more AG1, be more Bardi, and less like a rash Basuma. 2024 is the year of complete players, proper decisions, and no 10-toes tackles. Just loads and loads of nutritional supplements in your body. Happy holidays, my AG1 friends.
AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/extrainch. That's drinkag1.com/extrainch. Check it out. Annoyingly, I did think Klinsmann, and I thought, I don't think he played in France. But then I remembered, of course he did. We joined from...
That's why you're not on these quizzes, Windy. Be more tea. Just shut it out.
Abid David says, couple of games recently where we've started the game really dominating teams, creating multiple chances and scoring. Second half, with tactical adjustments by the opposition team and maybe mental and physical fatigue on our part and injuries, we get worked out. Our effectiveness drops off and we give up chances without creating as much. Next season, with full Ange ball and a stronger squad, does the same thing happen, albeit over the course of a season? We start strong, but the league works out how to counter our high possession, high risk game, and we get picked off again and again. Nathan, this is something we've spoken about a little bit across the season. I don't think it was necessarily the case against Forest for the reasons you've already said, but do you think we will get as easily? We will get found out. Will opposition teams have the better of Postecoglou and come on strong in the second half?
I think I've been surprised how little of back fives we've seen up against us, and I think that the Forest game is a good example of the effectiveness of not allowing our wingers to turn. We have seen that a little before, opening day against Brentford, and then there was another, was it Fulham? Someone didn't let our wingers turn. Sheffield United, probably. So we'll probably see more of that. In terms of just like finding us out, that's doable now due to our injuries, because you can say, here's a weak point and you can focus on it. I think that we'll be quite hard to find out when we either have this season enough players back, or hopefully in future when we've got sufficient depth to always provide something. And then of course hitting the 1v1 specialist button once we have a 1v1 specialist in the squad, that will make us really hard to stop, in my opinion. I was the other night like 2 a.m. I was messing around doing what I imagine people think tactics nerds do, which is playing around with my lineup graphic and like trying to work out how a 3-4-3 could set up in the low, medium and high defensive blocks and jump up the wing back to the fullback in certain moments and stuff like that. As in, like, if I had a totally tactical, flexible squad, how would I set up against Postecoglou? And I think a 3-4-3 with super aggressive wingbacks would be, I think that would be the way to do it, in order to have like a really aggressive medium block and occasionally press high. But the ability for any given squad to just do that for an upcoming weekend fixture isn't that easy. And then Forrest played the back five and kicked the crap out of Sunny all game. So I don't know. I don't see a way for us to be found out. Like, for me, Guardiola is, you know, the best tactician on the planet, and he came prepared for Spurs with a diamond midfield where his wingers tucked in and tracked our fullbacks across the pitch. And then we subbed Højbjerg on, played with a two-man midfield, and you know, were tactically equal or better to City. It always feels like the current working methods could never possibly be outdone. Of course, the tactical game will evolve around and beyond the way that we're currently playing. But I think that, in short, we will be very hard to find out anytime soon.
There's a real obsession with people being worried about being found out or worked out. I don't think it doesn't happen that way. Like, Pochettino didn't get found out. Pochettino lost his central midfield anchor.
Yeah.
He had two injuries in Wanyama and Dembele that just crippled the central midfield, and he was unable to kind of replace them. Sissoko, Winks just weren't proper replacements. Man City, have they been found out? I think this is more about Pep losing De Bruyne and Haaland having a bit of a funk, and then also Pep's fear of counter-attacking teams, of dead ball specialists and filling his team full of massive West Brom players. So I think he hasn't been found out. He's almost second-guessed himself, and I think his team is so far away from what you would classify a classic Pep team. I think he's almost kind of got inside his own head, and I think I wouldn't be surprised to see him step away from City, because I think he's losing his own personality at the moment there. So I think there's a natural cycle to every kind of team, but I don't think Spurs have been found out right now, because I don't even think Spurs know who they are themselves. So I wouldn't get too worried about our second half drop-offs. I think that's to do with individuals just not being up to scratch and fatigue and injuries.
Barney's already mentioned early transfer window dealings. We're getting quite close now to the transfer window being open, and I've actually seen some murmurings on Twitter and Instagram that we might have started our business already by signing a fifth...
Wait. Instagram now for ITK as
this
well.
I suppose it is ITK technically, but we've signed a 15-year-old striker from Glentoran called George Feeney, who is the son of Warren Feeney, who played for Bournemouth in the early noughties. Feeney is a player I had actually heard of because he scored as a 15-year-old for Glentoran's first team, and then got, or maybe was already in the Ireland under 17 squad, so is playing up two age groups, which is quite impressive. He's made 5 appearances for Glentoran. I hope I'm pronouncing that team name right. That's how I've always said it, and I'll probably get Irish people yelling at me now. So that's quite exciting. I did watch the under-18 game at the weekend. I've seen a few of their games this season. They lost at the weekend to West Ham. They lost 4-2. West Ham were very, very good at this level at the moment. They have a brilliant number 10 who is very exciting. Spurs have a couple of really, really promising players. Some you'll know about. Mikey Moore is injured at the moment, but he's obviously the pick of the bunch. You might have heard of Callum Olusezi and Tyrese Hall, who are very promising midfielders. And actually, Olusezi played as number 10 in this game, and I felt like that was a bit of a problem for us. I think we needed him earlier in build-up, and that might have been one of the reasons why we struggled a little more. But there is another player who I really, really like, and I don't think I've heard or seen him mentioned too much. He's called Leo Black, and he is a inverted right back. They are playing a little bit of Ange ball. Leo Black reminds me of Kyle Walker-Peters in some ways. He's a bit more passy than Walker-Peters, probably, but he plays right back in the defensive phase. He joins in midfield when we've got the ball, and he's a good dribbler, good passer, pops up in the opposition box. Really good, really good all-round player. I'm very keen on him, and I think he is one to watch. I'd like to think that we've got some sort of fast-track route being planned for him. He's not the biggest, so that he'll need to bulk out a little bit before he gets any first team time, I imagine. But I would like to think we're getting him involved in first team training sometime soon, and getting him involved with the under-21s regularly as well, because he's very talented, tactically really smart, really talented lad. Nathan, what are you thinking about the January window? Reports in the press today that we want to sign 3 players. If I had to guess, I would guess centre-back, number 6, striker.
Striker.
Just because we're going to lose Son for a lot of January, and also he's old. Valise isn't ready yet, and Richarlison can fit in out wide as well. So I feel like another forward. I mean, obviously you want a dribbly winger.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen in January,
is it? Yeah,
we've
got 2 good strikers. He's scoring goals now.
But we're not signing a dribbly winger in January, are we? That's a summer. That's a summer target.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'd do. Yeah, we desperately need a centre-back, obviously. So we talked about this a little earlier, but I'm drawing up 3 lists. I've talked about this a little before as well. A list of high-level players who could potentially come in and cover either role, with Todibo being my number one option. And then some players who could, like, you know, be like Ben Davies and cover left centre back and left back, or cover right centre back and right back. Struggling with my right footers on that list. But I think that, yeah, essentially, if you can cover both with one transfer, even if it's an expensive transfer, that does a hell of a lot for our squad. But then you could probably make the same case for having a right footer who could cover right back and right centre back, so that you don't have to bring Emerson Royale into the squad. So, tough one, yeah. And then, obviously, we need some solution to Bissouma being first suspended and then away. And I believe that our current solution is Højbjerg and or Skip, which I don't feel great about. I've talked about my solutions for that again and again. Rosendo Jr. being the top one. And then, I would definitely bring in a 1v1 specialist as a high priority as soon as possible, because I think that will transform our attack for the rest of the season.
I think you're right, but they signed Solomon and Johnson in the summer, so I don't think that they believe that is a priority.
Oh, God. The report the other day, coming from 2 different sources, of which I think one was Dan Kilpatrick and maybe one was The Athletic in some variety, was Spurs are looking at signing either a striker or a left winger due to Son's versatility.
Okay.
Which for me is quite a bad misread, in my opinion, on Son's ability on the left. Because, okay, he skinned up the corpse of Kieran Trippier a couple of times, but he really struggled against Forest. Meanwhile, he's absolutely bagging goals in the middle of the pitch, especially at least when there's space to run into, and otherwise there's Richarlison. So for me, it would be crazy to go for a striker when, in my opinion, we've got 2 good strikers and 0 triply creative both-siders. And obviously with... with Kulusevski now moving in from the right and being really excellent in the middle, it means that you can look at right-siders, at left-footers. Again, my position is that we're looking for a player who can go both ways, and therefore they should also be able to play on both sides, but that doesn't work perfectly. But there are, Matthias Süle, who's a Frosinone on loan from Juve, and they're looking to sell apparently, is a left-footed right-sider. And then also Bakayoko at PSV, same thing.
John Youngblood had asked about Bakayoko and Nusa as options on the wing.
So Nusa I really like. Nusa's high on my list. He's operating in Belgium, which is obviously not the highest level league, and the same goes for Bakayoko, is that if you want a player who's going to like bam come in impact immediately rather than be another player who is at the level of Hill, Solomon, and so on, if you want someone who's like guarantee that level, is someone from the Eredivisie or Belgium going to come in and do that, you know, in their second or third match? Maybe, quite possibly, and these are really fun players, but
they should have been who we signed instead of Solomon, right?
They should have been who we signed as a summer transfer, as a perspective, let's see how they do for a season. Whereas right now, if we're looking at improving the first 11, in my opinion, that's what this transfer needs to do, then you're much safer going for a player who's already operating in a top five league, and therefore Süle would be, he stands higher on that basis. So the other top five league players are Armin Lloriente, it's a Sulu, Savio at Girona, although Girona are a top of the league and absolutely flying.
I was about to say, I know it's pretty obvious choice because they're doing incredible, but that boy could run. And that boy could dribble.
Oh boy, he can run and dribble.
Go get him. He's cheap as well. It's got to be cheap.
Maybe. The thing is, he's technically on loan from... Ooh, who is it? I can't remember.
PSV. PSV?
No, he is... Let me look this up because it's kind of interesting.
The boy's amazing, honestly. I don't watch La Liga, but yeah, I watched the... I watched the Barcelona... I watched the Barcelona game and whiz! Yeah. Him. The boy can go.
He can go.
And he reminded me of when I first saw Mitoma. I was like, oh, hello. Yeah. So that would be my...
So he's a left-footed winger that plays on the left.
He is, but he can go inside and outside because he's just an absolute freak. And I assume he could play on the right. I think I've watched him on the right. Anyway, Trois and Girona are owned by City Football Group. Mm. So he's currently... He's currently on loan from a club who were like about to get relegated from Ligue 2 or something, loaned out to a team on top of La Liga. It's all a bit sus, isn't it? Both owned by Citigroup. So trying to get hold of them is difficult. But then it's like, if you've got a really great player in that system, surely the purpose is to take them to Man City. But at Man City, they've got Doku and Grealish. So, like, what's the plan there? I don't know. I'd love to get a hold of it. It's worth a try. It's worth inquiring because you don't know. But my feeling is that, like, City Football Group have trademarked him for, you know, earmarked him for some purpose. You've got Cherki, who is maybe going to get relegated from Ligue 1 also. Leon, he plays more of a central role, but I think he'd be very good playing out wide as well. And then Neto's out injured, and Williams has signed a new contract, and Mitoma has signed a new contract, and Zaragoza is going to Bayern. So now we're getting a little low on numbers.
Bardi, do you think three signings in January is realistic, given the amount of business Spurs usually do?
Yeah, I think so. We did two once before with Bentancur and Kulusevski. So I don't think three is... I think if we aim for three, we'll kind of settle on two. But I'd quite like us to see. If we remain in this position, we really kind of need it just to make sure we get there, because I don't think anyone predicted Aston Villa being this strong. And, you know, there's still Chelsea, if they eventually sort themselves out, there's still Chelsea, Man United and Newcastle kind of floating around as well below us.
There is a suggestion that Chelsea want to sell Conor Gallagher because of FFP concerns. And we know that we were in for him late in the summer window. I know positionally he doesn't match up to what we need. We need to prioritise a 6 rather than an 8. But what do you think the chances are of us going back in for Gallagher?
So, yeah, I think This is interesting. We were linked back in the summer, and I was a little more confused then because my feeling is, well, Skip just scored two goals against Barcelona, and then, you know, Sarr scored that goal against United. So we've got players arriving in the box. You look at the success that Postecoglou had at Celtic, a significant aspect of that was, I forgot his name. Matt.
I know who you mean.
Oh, O'Brien? God.
Dobson Smith.
No, he's
O'Brien. No,
Malcolm
O'Reilly.
O'Reilly, that's it. I knew it was an own. I knew it was an own name. Close. He plays for Denmark.
Yeah, he plays for Denmark. With a classic Danish surname, which is obviously why I couldn't recall it. O'Reillyson. So he especially, but also Hatate to a lesser extent, were significant arriving in the box to score goals. And that's a significant part of you know, Ange Ball, which I guess we've kind of been lacking. Hasn't really shown up. Like, it started doing that. We started seeing that with Sarr, but then he had to go, you know, do the Sissoko thing of babysitting right back, which also makes sense for his skill set in terms of having space to operate in. So I guess we kind of are missing that profile in the squads, but like, it's way down in my opinion. Maybe I'm just seeing something that I'm not, in terms of, oh, we would just definitely have an extra two goals a game if there was a player arriving in the box here and arriving here. In my opinion, Udogie is doing a very good job doing that.
Or maybe he really likes Bentancur as the six. I thought Bentancur looked good there in his relatively few minutes.
I agree.
Better than I expected. The thing is, my view on Bentancur has always been he fits the eight profile, the Ange eight profile, so nicely. He's really good at arriving in the box, as we saw last season with some excellent finishing. He's an incredible presser. I think it's one of his finest attributes. He's, you know, long stride, high energy, time to tackle well, doesn't give away too many free kicks. I love that for him. I love that role for him. But, and especially coming back from serious injuries, that six role might be the one he's being earmarked for, in which case I think Gallagher makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Here's two things. One, it's down the list of priorities, in my opinion. Although I see what you're saying about Bentancur playing number six, and then maybe things are slightly different in terms of where the gaps are and aren't. Two, if Chelsea needs to sell him because they're in trouble with financial fair play, let them suffer. Fuck them.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, I don't want to do them a favour, you know? If they've got themselves in a hole spending £1 billion on 20-year-olds that they can't get on the pitch and Pochettino doesn't like, but he does like Gallagher, and they're trying to sell him out from, you know, fuck them. Get them in trouble. Let them land in trouble. Let's not help them out. Let's not do them any favours. And then we'll pick them up on a free when they get liquidated.
Well, we'll do a double deal with them. We'll have Gallagher and Madueke for 30 mil.
Do you think he'd come back?
Who knows? But I mean, 1v1 winger. Buddy, what's the position of priority for you?
I don't know. A midfielder. I wasn't expecting this question to come my way. I guess a central midfielder. Sell Højbjerg and get a new midfielder.
I mean, that's been your transfer priority for what, five transfer windows now?
It's my objective. I'm sticking with it now.
Do we need centre back cover? No. Do we need a winger to get around a player and put crosses in? No. What we need is to get Højbjerg out of my club. Priority number one.
I can't keep talking about it. I try my best, but then you lot keep bringing him up. And he never gets injured. Like, what's that about?
Cyborg.
Should be doing some study on him. Get that man's DNA.
He slows
and see
down,
what
doesn't
got.
He? When his body's done in, when he's redlining, yeah. His performance levels drop. When he was putting out 4K minutes a season, he didn't get injured. He just slowed right down for safety. It's smart. Other players should preserve themselves similarly.
He's like a Galapagos a tortoise. You know, you have these flies or these butterflies that come out and they have to do all of their stuff in one day. Whereas a Højbjerg just kind of just plods around and survives and like endures. He's just an enduring footballer that we just need to get rid. Let's send him to Juve. They'd love an enduring footballer. He would be so at home there.
Last question. Just because Nathan mentioned Udogie getting in the box earlier, I like this one. Noel Fersman says, is Destiny Udogie going to start next season as a fullback, or are we going to see a Gareth Bale-like transformation to an attacking player? I mean, I think he is a perfect fit for the Ange left side fullback. I love him in that role. He's doing a great job defensively, in my opinion, and he does pop up in the box. I would like to see him be a little bit more decisive in the final third. I think that's where he's probably lacking the most, but what a player, what a talent. So much more to come.
This is a kind of obsession of turning fullbacks into like forwards. Because when Bale did this, it was a different era of football. Fullbacks were still, you know, if you look back at the fullbacks then, they were still very kind of Gary Neville mode kind of players. Okoto, these kind of guys that would just hold the line, hold position and work the ball down the line. I think fullbacks have changed and become such a crucial part of how we play and especially how Ange plays. I think it would be a madness to take someone like Destiny or Porro out of a role where they're really excelling just because they fit the kind of profile of being a forward player, you know?
Windy, you're not very online anymore. Have you seen the meme going around of the debate guy rejecting some baity TikTok question? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have not.
Okay. So obviously, there's so much context to unwrap here immediately. There's obviously this trend of like people doing vox pops for TikTok content where they put a microphone on someone and they ask them some dogshit question and they pick the most extreme answers and they make a compilation video out of that. And there's this, you know, dude on like a campus or whatever, and he's going around, he's asking people a really awful contrived political question that's like, would you rather have a strong economy or like LGBTQ rights or some other nonsense, right? Yeah. And then, this guy comes up and he's got like the most 2000s forum poster energy you've ever seen in your life, right? He's got like a ponytail. He's got an old school Bluetooth earpiece in. He's got like a brown leather jacket that he's fiddling with the entire time. And he's like, both, right? And so... and so my answer to this question is playing inverted fullback is an attacking player under Postecoglou.
That's it, isn't it? It is. There's no need for him to move position because he's already doing the attacking stuff. I think there are going to be a lot more goals from Udogie to come in the future. The thing is, like, he's quite conservative when he's out wide. When he gets forward and he's out wide, he normally just wants to lay it off to a teammate and then find his way into the 6-yard box. And I think that bodes well for future goals.
He would have been a terrible wing back under Conte. I'm putting my foot down on this. He would have absolutely sucked. If he played at all, he would have fucking sucked.
He's not interested in going on the outside and getting crosses in. That is not his game at all. Yeah. All right, that'll do for this week. And this will be the last Extra Inch before Christmas. There'll be one out hopefully on the 27th, we think. So have a wonderful Christmas. Enjoy, hopefully, the Spurs game against Everton. How are we feeling about that? Feeling okay? No Bazuma, no Doggy. It's not ideal.
And we've met a really galvanised Everton team as well.
Yeah. Buddy, what are your Christmas plans?
I am at home celebrating with the family, doing some cooking.
Sounds wonderful. How about you, Nathan?
Wearing my Angemas jumper.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the X-Subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.